This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. As part of its On the Ground series, Soapbox Cincinnati has been exploring Covington. The second largest city in our region has been experiencing a revitalization during the last several years. And joining us for a look at the people and places that make up Covington are Community Development Program Director with the Center for Great Neighborhoods, Rachel Hastings, Soapbox co-editor and On the Ground project editor, Hannah Purnell, and Soapbox contributing On the Ground writer, Liz McEwen. You can join us 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Rachel, Liz, and Hannah, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
So who wants to be my historical expert here?
Probably
would that,
me.
Would that be Rachel? So a little background on Covington, Rachel. How long has it been a city, and what territory does it cover?
Covington has been a city since 1815, so we celebrated our bicentennial 2 years ago, which we're very excited about. Covington is actually a very unique geography in that we have this very urban core up near the Ohio River that was developed in the early 1800s. We also have kind of a first-ring suburb of Latonia that was annexed in the early 1900s, and then we have a very suburban rural area south of 275 that was annexed in the 1960s. So it's about 40,000 residents, but incredibly diverse geography and population.
The second biggest city in our region, but it's the fourth biggest in Kentucky, is that right?
That's right. Yep.
Yeah. Liz, you compare Covington to a sleeping giant that's beginning to wake up. Mm-hmm. So what are the signs that you're seeing? And Hannah, you can join in on this as well. What are the signs that you're seeing that Covington is reawakening?
Well, I think that a lot of it has been happening for a long time, but especially as an outsider, someone who does not live in the city of Covington and is looking at it from the outside in, you start to see these business districts coming alive, residential districts coming alive, things that people who've lived there for a while are already familiar with, and it's no surprise to them. But, you know, from the outside peering in, it's sort of like watching it sort of shake off the dust in a lot of ways. But I think most of it, you know, is residential and business development, as well as some educational developments as well.
Mm-hmm. Hannah, what are you seeing? What are the signs you see that the growth is coming, that's starting?
Those things that Liz just mentioned, I think that probably the thread that ties it all together is something that we talk a lot about, and that is Covington's sort of unique ability to empower residents. So if somebody has a great idea, if they want to create public art or, you know, some kind of movement to help disabled people, the steps to doing those things, the empowerment process, I guess, so to speak, is just, I think, much more fluid than you see on this side of the river and in other parts of northern Kentucky.
So they're willing to embrace things that other neighborhoods, other parts of town might not be willing to embrace?
That's right.
Now, you held an event last month, what was it, Sink or Swim, I think was the title of it, where you were looking for what are some of the ideas for enhancing the entrepreneurial climate in Covington. And what were some of the ideas that came out of that?
Well, that was sort of an interesting exercise because we asked speakers to bring an idea that didn't necessarily have to be rooted in reality. So, you know, people, I think that they were all fabricated, to my knowledge. None of them were real. But we did it sort of like a game show. So Nancy Eichholz, for example, from Aviatra Accelerators, pitched an idea for a better parking situation in Covington, you know, with various elements. And so then the crowd got to sort of vote on whether they thought it was an idea that could work or not, you know, and if it was something that they would invest in. So it was really just kind of an exercise to test the waters, so to speak, in Covington's entrepreneurial community, because there's a lot going on, but not everyone maybe feels like they have access to that. So I think that it was a good way to explore a lot of diverse ideas and how those come to be in Covington.
Liz, Covington went through this period where it lost a lot of its population. I think it was about a third of it over a 50-year stretch.
Yeah.
How did Covington respond to that? That set it up for a payout in the future. Right? What did it do differently from other cities?
Well, I think one of the ways that it really paved the way for what's happening today is that it didn't experience the demolition that a lot of other urban areas experienced. There are some areas, especially near the riverfront, where that happened. But as a whole, a lot of the historic business districts and then the neighborhoods adjacent, so the residential districts that would have actually use those businesses remain intact. And so when there's now a rush of residents trying to find their way back to the city, they don't have to build their own house, or they don't have to build large skyscrapers of apartments to accommodate. The infrastructure of the city is still there. Whereas a lot of other urban areas, demolished a lot of those districts 30, 40 years ago.
So they had this foresight. They decided they were going to build on their history. Is that what they were doing?
Well, I don't know that it was all intentional. I think that, you know, one of the very first interviews that I did, the person I spoke to said, you know, I asked her, well, why is Madison still intact? Like, why are these buildings still here when so many other cities lost this? She said, well, Covington didn't have any money. They didn't have the money to demolish and rebuild. And so things just kind of lay fallow for a while. Maybe with foresight, maybe not, you know, on
maybe
purpose.
A little luck was involved.
Yeah, but regardless, like the infrastructure remained. And so, you know, maybe where it was an economic disadvantage at the time, now they're really reaping the benefits.
But I would add to that, too, though, that I think in some neighborhoods there was a lot of foresight. So, for example, in the 1960s, the Licking Riverside neighborhood, which is right by the confluence of the Ohio and Licking Rivers, a lot of now today, like, beautiful mansions, pre-Civil War mansions there, that neighborhood was threatened. It was almost all torn down in the name of urban renewal. And residents got together and fought that and said, you know, we love these buildings. We love this neighborhood. We're going to work together to save this neighborhood. And now, just about 5 years ago, it was named one of the best neighborhoods in the country by the American Planning Association. Mm-hmm. So it's residents working together with the city and police and other partners to say, this is important to us, this building stock, this community is important to us, and we're going to do everything we can to preserve this.
Rachel, tell us a little bit more about your organization.
Sure. So I work at the Center for Great Neighborhoods. We're a nonprofit community development organization, and we've been working in Covington since 1976. So our role is to work directly with residents to help them improve the quality of life in their neighborhoods. And so every day I'm working with residents from all across the city, all 19 neighborhoods, to identify projects to improve the quality of life. And so that can range from, you know, taking a vacant lot and making it into a pocket park, to identifying vacant housing that needs to be rehabbed, to working with the city and other partners on traffic and so forth. So every day is different.
Yeah, Cincinnati's got its 52 neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. Covington's got 19.
19 neighborhoods.
And Cincinnati's, of course, they all have that distinctive feel. One neighborhood's
yes.
different. Is it the same in Covington?
It's the same. Yeah, there's a very strong neighborhood identity, and actually something that our organization has been promoting for many years, so that, you know, folks within Covington always knew, this is Puseburg, this is Austinburg. They knew the boundaries, but outsiders didn't necessarily know that. So we've worked with neighborhoods on, you know, neighborhood promotion, like neighborhood murals and gateway signs, brochures, Facebook groups, and there's a very distinct, there a lot of them were developed by, you know, German developers back in the 1800s, and they have a unique building stock for each neighborhood.
How much of what we're seeing, Hannah, Liz, is a collaborative effort between the leaders, the businesses, and the residents of Covington?
I think all of it is. I don't know that I'm sure that in some places there's some more heavy-handed or kind of top-down decision-making, but my impression, at least, is that people really feel like they're not functioning independent of the other entities in the city, that there's really a lot of cooperation between, like you said, government agencies, as well as, you know, just neighborhood associations and individual residents and business owners.
Mm-hmm.
They're all working together.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Covington is unique that way, and it goes back to what we were saying about that empowerment factor that you don't see very often in other communities. But I think that, you know, the people that we've talked to almost ritualistically go back to referencing organizations like the Center for Great Neighborhoods and Renaissance Covington. So there's never, I don't think we've talked to anyone who felt like they were on their own as far as something that they wanted to accomplish, be it home ownership or higher education or... I think that Covington has a unique way of these connector organizations supporting people to do whatever they want.
Mm-hmm. You had an interesting article, Hannah, about how Covington's pub scene is reflecting the city's growth and revitalization. Can you tell us about that?
So, yeah, that was just sort of, I think it was probably unique in the series. It was just a look at how... you know, Covington, I think for a lot of people outside the community, is synonymous with pub culture, whether you're bar hopping on Main Street or, you know, going to one of these cool new craft cocktail bars. But it really, if you take a closer look, it really is reflective of the overall, the huge changes that we're seeing in Covington's business communities and economy. So, it was just kind of a fun tongue-in-cheek look at how, you know, the bar scene, it sort of reflects that larger growth.
How's the city doing from a health standpoint? Because Kentucky always ranks so low. I think in 2016 it was 47th out of 50 states mm-hmm. in terms of the health of its residents. How is all this impacting people's health in Covington specifically?
There's an organization called LiveWell, which is an outgrowth of Skyward that is working on health across northern Kentucky. And we actually have a Covington LiveWell pilot project that is working on trying to increase physical activity, access to nutritious food, and to do some smoking and tobacco prevention. It's a long haul. We have a long way to go in Kentucky and in Covington specifically. But I think overall there's a lot more awareness of it these days than there used to be, and a lot more folks sort of taking the time to think about how do we change? I mean, this has been generations in that we've, you know, made ourselves unhealthy in Kentucky. So how do we take small steps that are achievable so that we can see some change in those goals?
And Liz, so we've got this, would you call this a partnership economy that we have going on in Covington where everybody's kind of sharing and they're working this together? And
sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how's this benefiting? How's this being a payoff for people who would call themselves urban ecologists?
Oh, well, the urban ecologists. You know, one example is there's a woman named Alexa who I interviewed for one of the stories, and she's running what she considers an urban farm. So it's not just a garden that she's tending in her backyard where she's growing cucumbers. You know, she's running a production enterprise. She's employing herself, hoping to someday be able to employ others. And so she's creating a business plan. She's got the plan in place. She's got multiple gardens that she's tending and working. But then she's also educating students at the same time. So she's partnering with schools. She's also running a farmer's market. So she's actually selling the produce to the broader community. And then she's got all these other sort of partners moving as a part of this machine that she's tending. And so I think she's one example of, you know, she saw a need and she has a skill and she found a lot of people who are really interested in helping support what she's doing and also people who are interested in investing and in purchasing from her. So it's like a lot of different parts of this machine working together.
Yeah. How's the economy of Covington doing overall these days?
I think it's doing really well. It's, you know, we are seeing all these, you know, downtown buildings and in other neighborhoods being revitalized, which, of course, is helping our property taxes. But also we've got a lot of new employees with new jobs in the community. So that really helps folks with a little more, you know, spending income that can support the bars and restaurants. And I think there's a real strong ethic with a lot of folks that live in Covington to support local businesses. So anytime there's a new restaurant that opens or new cafe, everybody wants to flock there to support it and run into all their friends and neighbors. So I think there's a real strong sense of community, and that helps everybody, and it helps the city being a little, as a, you know, city government, be a little more economically strong too.
Yeah, and is this having an effect? Is it helping? Is it benefiting the residents of the city?
Sure. I think that's really important. I mean, so that, you know, the health of downtown Covington affects all of us. We all need a downtown to be strong and economically viable, so that we can go, you know, shop and eat there, but also so that we can, you know, come back to our home neighborhoods and enjoy our community together.
You know, some people think of Covington or of Kentucky as a southern state. Some people don't. Would you say that Covington has more of a Midwestern feel to it than a southern feel?
I think a lot recently it's become popular to refer to it as Cincinnati's Brooklyn. And I think in a way that that's appropriate because it's definitely got a more, I think, eclectic sort of neighborhood vibe, even though it's 19 neighborhoods. You know, mm-hmm. there's just this feeling when you're in Covington, I think that it is more comfortable and relaxed. I would agree with that.
The Covington Police Department uniform is their emblem on their side of their uniform says Gateway to the South. And I think that's really true. I mean, Covington is sort of the Midwest, but we're sort of the South, too. And we kind of are in both of those places. And on any given day, we could, you know, fall one way or the other a little bit more, but we're definitely on the tip of the South, yeah.
Does Covington ever feel like it's overshadowed by Cincinnati that doesn't get the credit?
that you it know, has
it's funny.
It.
I don't think a lot of folks in Covington feel that way. I feel like, you know, we've got our own thing going on. We've got amazing stuff going on this side of the river. And if you all from Cincinnati want to come down and join us, we'd be happy for you to do that. But, you know, folks are not obsessed about what's happening in Cincinnati. They're just sort of, we're living our own lives, doing our own thing.
They're worried about what's going on in Covington.
Yeah.
I've interviewed a few people who have basically told me, I don't really know what's going on in Cincinnati. You know, I don't get over there very much. And I think,
interesting.
You know, that's pretty cool that they live in this small city on the other side of the river, and they don't really need, you know, they benefit from the proximity of a larger city, but, you know, they've really got everything they need right there.
Yeah, and what about people in Frankfort and Lexington and Louisville? I mean, what's their view of Covington since?
You know, Kentucky is a very rural state. So when you talk to folks, like at the state government level, they are very preoccupied with how to help the urban or the rural areas. And I think there's sometimes a little distrust of urban communities in Frankfort. I think that's changing, but it's a long haul. But, you know, the issues that we face in Covington, Louisville, Lexington are quite different than the issues that they're facing in Hazard and Corbin and so forth. So overall, the state tends to have a little more of a rural focus.
So how's housing in Covington? How's the housing stock there? I mean, that's a big thing about attracting residents.
Sure. Back. I mean, I think one of the amazing things about Covington is that we have a very diverse housing stock. So we have really small, like, shotgun cottages, which might be 600 or 700 square feet. And then we also have, you know, large houses that are 4,000 square feet. We have amazing affordability across the neighborhoods. We've got, you know, old Victorians. We've got bungalows. We've got craftsmen. We've got new houses in South Covington. So pretty much anything you want to find, we have there.
How diverse is the community itself?
It's, I think, very diverse, both socioeconomically and ethnically. We're getting more. There's a large growing Guatemalan population coming into Covington, which has been exciting to see. And we've got folks, you know, that are both, you know, relying on food stamps, and folks that, you know, work for large corporations that are multimillionaires.
And Liz and Hannah, I can't remember who it was that wrote about this, but somebody wrote about somebody who was going to start a Mexican restaurant. And then ended up shifting gears and saying there are more Guatemalan people, so we're going to go with Guatemalan food instead.
That's Gutierrez Deli, actually.
Yeah.
And I think it was Sean who actually wrote about it, but yeah.
So that deli is on MLK Boulevard, and Claudio Gutierrez, who owns it, is actually Mexican. And when he first took over the deli, he started having Mexican pastries to sell, like Mexican breads and pastries, and nobody was buying it. So suddenly he realized, he walked around the neighborhood, realized that most of his customers were Guatemalan, so he changed to a different provider and sells Guatemalan pastries, and he sells out every day.
Yeah, and I think he's the difference between Guatemalan and Mexican is Guatemalan's not quite as spicy as Mexican, if I remember right from the article. What are some of the growth areas? I mean, I hear about Innovation Alley in Covington. Explain that to me and how much of an impact that's having on the city.
Well, Innovation Alley was so named because it has recently become home to a number of tech startups and business incubators, Aviatra Accelerators, who I mentioned before, and there's also UpTech, the Northern Kentucky Innovation Network with Casey Barrick doing great things over there. I think that the idea is that if we can give this cluster of brand and identity, both in geography and, you know, purpose, then it'll sort of be a little bit contagious and we can make it grow.
Mm-hmm. What about other growth areas in the city?
I think you know, similar to Innovation Alley, our downtown business district and Main Street are both doing very well these days with a lot of locally owned businesses, which is fantastic. And, you know, we have Riverfront Commons coming along the way in the next couple of years, which is a great opportunity to sort of re-envision what our riverfront looks like. You know, the IRS has noted that they are going to be closing down their Covington facility, which is both a challenge and an opportunity for us. It's a challenge because a lot of folks do rely on the IRS for jobs. At the same time, that opens up 25 acres on the riverfront for redevelopment. So I think if we kind of take that, you know, by the horns, we can really have an amazing new riverfront in Covington.
Liz, in writing your articles for the series, was there something you came across that surprised you?
Oh, that surprised me. You know, I really enjoyed writing the story that was sort of like the retrospective of the last 40 years, because I think that it's really easy to write about the new and exciting and innovative things. Those things are really up front. They're at the front of the stage. Everybody writes about them. Everybody knows about them. But the truth of any moving organism like a city is that there's always this background and these people that have been working you know, tirelessly for decades. Mm-hmm. And so it was really fun to get to sit down with, you know, two gentlemen who 40 years ago just sort of planted their roots and said, we're here and we're going to be here and we're going to sort of roll with the punches and see what where we can invest and where we can help make this city a great place. And, you know, being involved in business and politics and education and those stories are just really fun to hear. So I don't know, surprising as much as, you know, being able to pull out some of those background
just
stories
interesting,
is fun.
Interesting things. Yeah. And Hannah, what about you?
You know, I was telling Rachel earlier, I feel like the thing that has surprised me the most hasn't really been any storyline that we've uncovered. It's more just the – I've had several people ask me if Covington was paying Soapbox to write these amazing stories. Mm-hmm. And I think that's so interesting because, you know, we are a solutions-based publication. We talk a lot about what's good and how we can make it better. But it shouldn't be surprising to anyone that there are good things to talk about in Covington. You know, they're happening every day. So I think that this is maybe just the first time that it's been honed in on in this way.
And what do you think after taking this in-depth look at Covington and writing this series, what do you think about the future of the city?
Well, it's tough. I've said throughout this series that I'm a little close to the case because I grew up in West Covington. So, and Liz, you know, when we have back and forth, she'll turn her stories into me, and I'm just like, okay, this one brought tears to my eyes again, because it is a matter that's pretty close to my heart. But I think Covington's outlook is great. I hear more and more people, both transplants and, you know, people who are native to the region say that they're thinking about purchasing a home in Covington or starting a business in Covington. You know, maybe it's because I'm so, you know, sort of focused on Covington right now, but all I'm hearing are good things and people's curiosity about Covington. So I think, I really think the sky's the limit.
Yeah, Liz, what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'd agree. I think, you know, I've not heard much ill will toward Covington, you know, for as long as I've lived in Cincinnati. I think that people don't know a whole lot about it. They don't spend a whole lot of time there. But I think it's just sort of this mysterious sister across the river. But I think more and more people are starting to spend time there and getting to know the streets a little bit better. You know, even just writing stories and me learning how to navigate the neighborhoods and the arteries of the city. You know, once it becomes familiar, it becomes a very comfortable place to be. So I feel like, you know, the broader region will sort of start to understand that as well. As there are more things drawing people from outside the city in, it'll become a greater place for everybody to spend time.
Rachel, Liz, and Hannah, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
Community Development Program Director with the Center for Great Neighborhoods, Rachel Hastings, Soapbox co-editor and on-the-ground project editor, Hannah Purnell, and Soapbox contributing on-the-ground writer, Liz McEwen. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition. You can find archives of our programs at WVXU.org. The producer for today's show was Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer was Selena Reeder. Dave Shermer was the technical director. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Here and Now coming up next on 91.7 WVXU. On the next Cincinnati Edition, we'll get an update on the opioid crisis and how local political leaders, law enforcement agencies, and health officials are responding to the continuing epidemic. We'll also hear about the issues being discussed in City Council and County Commission. And we'll look at the latest stories taking place in Northern Kentucky and across the Commonwealth. Join us for our weekly news review on the next Cincinnati Edition, Friday afternoon at 1 on 91.7 WVXU.